Hi, this is John Barnes, and you're listening to Cop On.
Wow. Welcome, you zingy little tarts. This is Owen from Cop On. I'm delighted to be joined by Kev O'Sullivan from the Talking Cop, what was formerly NFC Day Trippers. I've got loads of things to ask. Kev is absolutely wonderful that he's with us for his Cop On debut. Alan is here as well. But before we get going, I've got a bit of an introduction because I was trying to look for a good poem to sum up the current state of affairs. And even though I'm not a fan of Edgar Allan Poe, because I think he was, number one, he was a bit of a dick. You know, he was an alcoholic and a big head and a bit of a, not the kind of guy that you want to meet. But number two, his writing's a little bit overrated, but I did like this poem, and you've got to be open-minded. You can't just write people off. This is a really good poem, and it's entitled A Dream, because that's what we surely all have at this point. So this is A Dream by Edgar Allan Poe. In visions of the dark night, I have dreamed of joy departed, but a waking dream of life and light hath left me broken-hearted. Ah, what is not a dream by day to him whose eyes are cast on things around him with a ray turned back upon the past? That holy dream, while all the world were chiding, hath cheered me as a lovely beam, a lonely spirit guiding. What though that light through storm and night so trembled from afar? What could there be more purely bright in truth's day star? There you go. Chose it because I thought, you know, it's about heartbreak and dreams, and we've had the heartbreak with Manchester City. Those city slickers, oil cheap bastards, ruining our fun. But I'm delighted that Nigel's popped in and Kev's here and Alan's here. So I'm going to start with you, Kev. First of all, Kev from Talking Cop. If you don't know Talking Cop, then I don't know who you are or where you are, but you're wasting your lives. Get onto Talking Cop on YouTube, and you can get it as a podcast. I've listened for years. It used to be the LFC Day Trippers. Kev, why the name change? I lost track of why.
Well, the reason for the name change, a lot of the guys who originally started, because I was the same as yourself, I started watching LFC Day Trippers, I suppose, during COVID. I stumbled across it when we all had loads of time in our hands. And I just got involved in the chat and involved in the community in the chat. And from there, ended up coming, being asked to come on a few shows. And from there, it just rolled on. But a lot of the guys who started the original Day Trippers have gone on to other things. Or, a lot of people just have lives now. And it's just too busy. And there's been a lot of people who've come on. And it was thought, for the amount of new people that are there, it was good to have something that is going to be, that's ours. And it's not to denigrate what the LSC Day Trippers did. What they did was absolutely fantastic. But this new version is like LSC Day Trippers 2.0 and Talking Cop is some of the old people, Gav, Shawnee, Keith, Phil was on show last night, and a mix of the new guys. And we're looking to take it on to further, you know, just to try to do more shows, more content, and try to be as honest as we can without being selling our souls, basically, you know, for views and ratings, which is what tends to happen on some places. But I think as long as we're coming across and we're honest and we're true to ourselves and we can stand over our opinions, and if we have a controversial opinion, we'll back it up. If you can't back it up, then you're in the wrong place. So I know I'm lucky. Really lucky to be still involved in a way with the channel. But it's a wide channel now where we've got contributors from Canada in Matt. We've had some from the States, Australia, UK, and Ireland. It's predominantly Dublin based, but it involves people from all over the globe, really. And we have listeners and viewers all over the world as well. I done a show this morning with Gav for our members, and we were getting updates from the weather in Queensland. And to say I felt utterly sick was an understatement.
Yes, I gather it's not so good in Ireland. So all the best to everybody You know, you and Alan and Nigel are all on the Emerald Isle, and everybody else who's listening, all of our cherished Irish listeners as well. Thank you very much. And that's the thing. If you want to go to Talking Copy, that's what you get. You get balanced views. It's down to earth. It's not, you know, I think personally there is a time and a place for the people who just, you know, they're in a way, they're just showing off the YouTube views. But I do find it kind of funny sometimes when people do go completely nuts and over the top. I think there is a time and a place for it, but that's just my opinion. It grates on a lot of people's nerves. So if you go to Talking Cop, you get absolutely none of that. You just get balanced views, and it's the good, intelligent chat about Liverpool. But staying with you, Kev, because a feature of the LFC Day Trippers and now Talking Cop for many years has been wonderful charity work, you know, fundraisers for all kinds of things. There was a little girl who needed an operation, and they managed to get a ton of money to send her off to the US, which is a wonderful story. I mean, that's just the dream of any podcast, is to do some good in the world instead of just ranting and raving at Paul Tierney. So tell us about the latest charity fundraising drive that you got going on at Talking Cop, please.
Well, it's probably the best thing about the channel is, look, there's a load of us on there that we all come on and we all air our views and we talk an absolute load of codswallop from morning, noon and night. But the one thing that we're 100% committed on is every year we will get together and try to raise as much money as we possibly can for causes. Last year it was a GA club in Dublin, a ladies GA club in Dublin, to run the Dublin City Marathon, and in the end our target was €20,000 in conjunction with them. We ended up raising €26,000.
That was for breast cancer research.
And this year we've decided we're going to do it in two sections over the year. From January 1st up until June, our target is €10,000 to split between two charities. And the two charities are the Lighthouse in Dublin, which is a drop-in centre for people looking to make ends meet, basically. Every city in Europe, every city in the world will have these drop-in centres for the homeless. And all we're trying to do is raise €5,000 to help them want to stay open longer, to provide more services, but to basically provide meals for people who don't have it. And if we can contribute to that in any way, that's one target. The other target is Fan Supporting Food Banks, which is a joint initiative by Liverpool and Everton in the Spare the Shankly and Ian Byrne started it with the Spare the Shankly. Fan Supporting Food Banks. It's a joint effort between Liverpool and Everton football clubs, the fans, not the clubs themselves. Mm. And anyone who's ever been to Anfield will see the vans. So everyone pretty much knows the work that they do. And it's shocking that in 2024, there is a need for food banks. And this is a massive, massive issue. And if it's €5,000 to them, we'll go a long, long way. And anything that we can contribute to that, the better. We know times are hard at the minute. A couple of days to payday if you're monthly pay. So January has been the longest month that you will ever know. But in all seriousness, we're just looking to try to raise as much money as possible. We're also doing a golf day later in the year where if people want to get involved, sponsor a tee box, play, they can get a hold of us through social media or through email at talkingcop1@gmail.com. And it's the bonus of the channel. It's like, yeah, we love coming on and talking about football, but if we can help raise money as well, as you know, if we can use our platform to help raise money, it's fantastic. It's double win. And you know, we'll never get bored of asking, and we'll never apologize for asking. So the more we can raise, the better. And that's the whole aim of the channel, really, is to help people.
It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I've put the link in the chat on YouTube for anyone who's watching now. I'm just going to say as well that I'm going to put it in the description of the audio because you know, our audio feed. Hello to all of the audio listeners all around the world. It's absolutely lovely. Each and every one of you is appreciated. I've really liked it since coming back with Cop On after, you know, trying to raise a kid for the first 7 months or so of his life, and now I've got a bit more time because we've got a babysitter. I've had some lovely messages from people from all over the place saying they're happy that Cop On is back. So thank you to everybody. Really, really appreciate that. Alan is here. I'm delighted that you're here, Alan. Let's talk about the footy. Since we spoke last, there was, the two top form teams in the Premier League over the last eight, nine games, Bournemouth and Liverpool faced off against each other. They looked each other in the eyeballs, and Liverpool scratched those eyeballs clean out, if you pardon the expression, with a 4-0 victory that really put a spring in my step. It put a spring and summer in my step. Alan, before when we spoke before and a couple of weeks ago, you said that you were about a 16 out of 20 in terms of optimistic for our title charge. But after a performance like that, without Mo Salah, who we're going to be without for maybe 4 weeks, maybe more, who knows, is that gone up? Has it gone up, the 16 out of 20 chances of Liverpool in this title race, or do you feel exactly the same?
Firstly, on, if you don't mind me saying, I enjoyed the match the other day. The 21st of January was my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday!
Thank you, but more importantly, it was my son Adam's 21st birthday.
Oh, so lovely!
Yeah, so we looked at the game together with his sister Sarah, and so it was the perfect birthday present.
Oh, wonderful! So, what a lovely birthday present! Happy birthday to your son from everybody here. I'm sure he's listening. We're very wish him a very happy birthday, and you too.
Thank you very much.
Put yourself down. It's happy birthday to you too.
I always told him he was the best present ever, and he still is. So that's no more. What more can you say?
Absolutely lovely. Did you? But hang on. More importantly, did you get any nice presents? Did you get a Trent Alexander-Arnold mug?
No, I'm getting old now. I'm 54, so I got slippers and jumpers and stuff. So
great. That's excellent.
I was just thankful there wasn't a pipe in it. But going back to the football, I'm still 16 out of 20 on. I still think City are too dangerous there behind us to can put a run together. I think, like you said, with Salah not being there, even though we had a fantastic win the other day, game two halves, there were certain things, not just the obvious things you missed Salah for. Like I said to Adam at one stage, they had a few little snipey little shots in the box, and you could see Alisson grab the ball, take a few steps forward, look up, and then just stop. Because 9 times out of 10, when that happens in our game, Salah is off the pitch, and that's what Ali was looking for. He was looking for that run. So unfortunately, if Salah's out for 3-4 weeks or more, we're going to have to come up with something new for that. But very positive performance, because like you said, the first half, we were awful in the first half, apart from McAllister. I said to the kids, even 20 minutes into the first half, he's probably the best player on our team, because not just the blocks we all seen, or the tackle or the pass. There was times in the game where the game was gone 15, 20 minutes and you hadn't noticed them, but yet you knew he touched the ball 3 or 4 times. So to me, he was just immense in both halves, but particularly the first half where we needed someone to be that leader. And then second half, wow, fantastic. And of course, Jota, this Lotta, is fantastic. I was expecting him to score goals. And then of course, I'd have to bury my head in the sand. Darwin come up and shut me up twice. So hopefully
you've been very critical, Alan, haven't you, about Darwin and the chances he's missed.
Yeah, well, I was on the fence. I was thinking the time he needed to step up, but I know, I know he's doing the work and all that stuff. But he needs to get them goals, and getting 2 goals in the game, I think, is important, because if you get one, fair enough, you got one. But to get 2 should really boost them now, and hopefully he'll keep my big trap shut for the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I criticised Joe Gomez last season. I called him the new Des Walker, who. For anyone who doesn't remember Des Walker, he was a brilliant, brilliant defender, but then he lost the plot at about age 25 and became a very average defender for the rest of his career for no apparent reason. No one really knows what happened. But Joe Gomez has totally proved me wrong, and there's something beautiful about proving, you know, being proved wrong when you've been, especially when you've been critical, and you know, but
and it's fair to be critical. That's what you know. It's not you're not picking on a player, you're not slamming them. You're critical when they're not doing well, and then when they step up, you step up and take it. And
yes, exactly. I'm happy for him, and you know, even being critical, we want them to do well, don't we? But you know, but interesting stat that I discovered the other day, Alan, on Darwin, is I'm sure maybe you noticed in our group chat that we've got on WhatsApp, because I put it on there, and I put it on YouTube and a YouTube short, and I put it on Twitter, and I got about 2 likes worldwide in all the platforms, and it's that I looked at the goals plus assists per 90 minutes. Because if you look at the actual appearances for Darwin Núñez this season, it's like, you know, he's had 30 odd appearances and he's got 10 goals, 10 assists. But if you do it by minute, because he's played a lot of times when he's a substitute or he's come off, he has 0.97 goals and assists per 90 minutes, which is basically either a goal or an assist per 90 minutes. And it's exactly the same ratio, 0.97 goals and assists per 90, as Thierry Henry. Not just old Thierry Henry at Barcelona or LA Galaxy or wherever he ended up. Prime Thierry Henry in the invincible season of 03-04, he had exactly the same goals and assists per 90. So, Alan, just finally, before moving to Nigel, he's been waiting patiently as he's in the broom cupboard at work, trying to you know, before we get to Nigel, he's that contradiction, isn't he, Darwin? Because there's that stat which is utterly unbelievable, that he's just as effective as prime Thierry Henry, compared to the fact that he tops the charts for big chances missed with 19 this season just in the Premier League. So he could have 19 more goals. He could be on 29 goals and 10 assists on the 23rd of January. So that dichotomy, that contradiction, that's the second time in 2 episodes I use the word dichotomy. I have to look up the meaning. I don't even know what it means. but there is that contradiction, I'll say, between the brilliance and the madness, and it's all of it with Darwin. And I just wonder if, you know, you're going to stay patient and just accept that he's going to keep ballooning things over from 2 yards, but still come up with either a goal or an assist in every single match.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, you know, and I say, when you asked that question the last day, you said, is anyone starting to worry about him? And I was saying, yeah, I was worrying about it. But like, I've supported Liverpool long enough to have seen, you know, Peter Crouch and players like that took so long to score their first goals and stuff. So like, Darren is captain chaos, you know, and even when he does come on and not score a goal, or he misses some of them chances, when he's running to the left, he's taking 2 players with him. So, you know, he's a big benefit to the team. It's not as if he's standing in the corner with his hands on his hips sulking or anything. So, yeah, I didn't lose faith in him. I was just getting a bit peed off from not scoring. You know, it was just, he just needed one to hit off his backside and go in or something.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but he's captain chaos. Like, and
Lord Havoc, I prefer. The Lord of Havoc.
Yeah.
And Nigel, it was a good performance the other day by Liverpool in the end. I think even in the first half, Darwin was causing a lot of havoc. You know, he wasn't the only one. But who was your man of the match? Because that was a real, real nice, heartwarming 4-0, wasn't it?
I don't think there was a bad performance. There might have been a couple of slightly above average performances, but there wasn't a bad performance. You know, you could have had anybody. Joe Gomez was very, very good. A couple of little bit ropey moments. Both centre halves, it's as good as a duet centre for like taking the centre halves as a pair is as good as you see. They were both absolutely magnificent. Conor Bradley was magnificent as well. Did really well. Might have scored, but got to go with Alexis. I think on his first half, he was, if you look at the stats, he was top in nearly all aspects of how we played. I thought he was just absolutely brilliant. Curtis Jones, because of Alexis sitting in there, is that to have been freed up as well. We look amazing. I'm probably going to go through most of the team here now as well, because they were all very good. Another thing to look at about Darwin is he got back to block one on the edge of our box in the second half. You know, it's exactly what we want. It's the Ian Rush thing again, defend from the front. But he was defending on the edge of our box. He made his own way, his way back to block a shot by Bournemouth on the edge of our box and then get up back up the field again. You know, it's Jota, we've said it before about Jota, plays a game for 94 minutes, does absolutely nothing, one chance goal. That's how he is. But he played very, very well. He gave the pass he gave for Darwin, the kind of a bit of a hump forward by Ibu in the first place. A great chest down and first time pass to Jota by Curtis Jones. It was a really, really nice touch.
Beautiful.
Two nice touches and a nice first time ball from Jota and a brilliant first time finish for a guy. You know, they're all going on about him. They were singing at him about, you know, Andy Carroll and stuff like that.
They were singing at the end of the match. Did you know that? Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard it.
At that point, that's funny because they just obviously.
The last twice he's played against him, he scored three goals and good goals.
Sorry, lads. I think they were singing to Solanke.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I think he was in Virgil's pocket, so he mightn't have heard much in there.
Well, very good. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The muffled crowd sound.
Yeah. One of the outstanding performances by a centre half, by the pair of them, it's the best we've seen in a long, long time as a pair. They were amazing. They were fantastic. And that test bump that they did was great. So
after that tackle. Brilliant.
Yeah, we didn't play great in the first half, but yes, in 90 minutes football, they had one shot on target in the whole game, and that was an easy one for Ali to handle. You know, we shut them down basically, and then came out in the second half and opened up a bit, and they couldn't handle it. Form team or not.
But that was the thing. I mean, they, you know, we shouldn't take that result for granted. They're no pushovers, far from it. They're a good team, although they had a lot of players missing, as we did. And, you know, Kevin, it's amazing. I mean, just before I bring you in, actually, just a couple of stats, because Nigel mentioned the stats from that game. On Konate, well, we'll start with the defence. Konate, he had one tackle, one interception, but nine clearances, which is absolutely whopping. Anything that came near him, he was able to get rid of it. He had 85.5% passing accuracy, 8 aerials won. He won absolutely everything in the air against Solanke. And between Ibu and Virgil, they just kept him completely quiet. Virgil, as usual on the stats, you can't see it because there's no tackles, there's no interceptions, there's nothing, but he was imperious. He's just there, and he's just sort of like this sort of, I don't know, some kind of weird scientific experiment where anytime the ball gets anywhere near the goal, he repels it without doing anything, really, that you can measure on a metric. He's absolutely wonderful, leading the line. And there was
he's a bit like, he's a bit, just sorry, Owen, he's a bit like this entity in the sky. You think he's there, but then suddenly it's a miracle he shows up.
maybe you doubt his existence and then he turns up at the right moment to there you go, perform some miracles. Absolutely. Maybe so yeah, I mean, defensively absolutely superb. You mentioned Connor Bradley, three shots, one on target, one key pass, and then defensively three tackles, which was the second most in the team, one interception and four clearances, which was the equal second on the team for clearances with Virgil and Joe Gomez. Brilliant by Connor Bradley. And as you say, so many positive things. But the player you mentioned before, Nigel, which I want to ask you about, Kev, is Alexis McAllister. Nine tackles, which according to Opta was the most for 8 years from any Liverpool player. Three interceptions, one clearance. In terms of pass completion, 87.5%, which is superb. But as well as that monstrous defensive effort, he had four key passes, which was the most in our team. Darwin Nunez was second with three key passes. And I listened to the new, and you should listen to it if you haven't heard it, a Joe Gomez podcast. There's a big interview on Liverpool, the official podcast. It's brilliant. And he talks about, at one moment, just very briefly, he talks about Alexis McAllister and Dominic Soboslai, and how they are both two characters who they have fun, you know, they're like chucking socks at each other in the changing rooms and all that, and so they're great lads and they have fun together, but they just have such confidence in their own ability that when they go out, they just know they're going to be good, you know. And he's a number six, converted to a number six, but he's like this sort of playmaker number six who can tackle. His only weakness, as Klopp mentioned himself post-match, is that you can sort of run past him whenever the space is there, so we have to be compact around him. But what have you made of his impact so far? Is he a 10 out of 10 for a summer signing, or a 9 or an 8? Where are you on McAllister, Kev?
I was delighted when we got him, first and foremost. I'd done a fair few pods last year with a Brighton podcast, the Albion Obsessed, and they were disgusted at the price that we paid for him because it was daylight robbery. And that's the recruitment team at Liverpool this summer has been outstanding. What they've done, they've literally rebuilt a midfield. We're top of the league. We've lost one league game this season. That Bournemouth side had won 7 out of their last 8. At home, we limited them to one effort on goal. Alexis McAllister needs legs around him for sure. Curtis Jones, vital. Dominic Szoboszlai, vital. Harvey Elliott looked a bit lost in the Bournemouth game. But I think Harvey Elliott's been at his best this season when he's been impacting off the bench. Last 20 minutes, 30 minutes of game, his game intelligence is very, very good. Alexis McAllister went and won a World Cup. He was arguably one of Argentina's best players that allowed Messi to play the way Messi played, along with Fernandes. The two of them and the Paul, the three of them really allowed Argentina to play the way they played. Alex McAllister, when we signed him, I was convinced we were signing an 8. And then bang, Fabinho leaves, Henderson leaves. Alexis, you're the 6. Okay, learn a brand new position. He'd done it with Brighton a couple of times next to Caicedo. And he'd done it absolutely fine. But he was the one who went forward. Caicedo was the one who sat. Different kettle of fish when you're playing in a 3. And playing the centre role of a 3, he needs those legs around him. That's why I'm convinced that we went for Gravenberch the way we did. Because I don't think he was on the radar until Klopp had assessed McAllister for that month, where he said, okay, we're going to need more legs. We've got a volume of games that we're going to be playing between now and January that everybody can play every role. You look at what he does on the ball, very similar to Thiago. He's comfortable. He's forward passing, his vision. Comfortable. No problems taking it in any situation. But he's developing the sense to anticipate like a 6. Fabinho was a master at it when he was at his pomp. You know, Fabinho never really, you didn't see him sliding in, but you saw him making blocks and interceptions because his ability to read the game was fantastic. McAllister will develop that in time because of his game intelligence. He's been an outstanding signing, but the best is yet to come from him. The questions are going to come in the summer as to what business Liverpool does, that maybe we see a 6 might come in that pushes, that allows us to play McAllister further off the pitch and give him that feather to his bow that he can do both. But I think the strength of this squad is its versatility. It's an adaptability within games. You saw it in the Bournemouth game when halftime, it was a bit of a stale first half. You know, they didn't do much. We didn't do much. We had some decent chances. We could have done better from set pieces. But it was a half that just plodded along. Klopp made tactical switches at halftime again, pushing Jota out onto the right, onto a fullback who was making his debut. And it changed the dynamic. He also pushed Joe Gomez more centrally. And that allowed Curtis to be wide and be more influential. And from there, we steamrolled. And once we got on a roll, there was no stopping. And I don't think we did anything fantastic in the Bournemouth game. I just thought we were ruthless. And we were clinical in finishing. The last goal, the cross by Joe Gomez, was an outstanding cross. You know, Conor Bradley was making his Premier League debut. And I don't know a single Liverpool fan who batted an eyelid when Conor Bradley was starting. Not a single one. I've been on the Conor Bradley train since I watched his debut for Northern Ireland. And you just knew there's a player there. When you look at his physical size, his ability to get up and down the wing, I've compared him to a very young Seamus Coleman in the way that his energy to get up and down the wing. He's an eye for a goal. When Seamus Coleman broke through at Everton, he had an ability to get into the box and be on the end of crosses to score goals. Conor Bradley showed that when he was at Bolton. He was outstanding for Bolton. And he's threatened it here with us in his debut. Three efforts on goal. Acknowledged at the end of the game that he should have scored the header. And almost like disappointed that he should have scored the header. That's ridiculous. The guy's a kid making his Premier League debut. And it's fantastic. It's great for the youth developments of everyone coming forward because they're seeing what pathways are there. And if you're good enough and if you play well enough, the pathways are there. And you jump back to the weekend. We trounced Arsenal 7-1 in the FA Youth Cup. And there's got to be names that were in that side that we're going to be looking back. Did you see that 7-1? Look at them now. Yeah. You know, we're in a fantastic spot. I'm looking at us at the minute. When you were talking to Alan earlier on about the league, there's a league there to be won. I don't believe Man City can keep Kevin De Bruyne fit for the rest of the season. I also don't believe that Erling Haaland that they signed to now he's been a freak, but he's been a freak who's been fit for a really long time. That's unusual in his career. What we're seeing in the last month is what's been normal for his career. All right. I don't think this version of Man City is what Man City have been over the last 2-3 years. I think their squad is extremely thin. I said that at the very start of the season when we were doing preview shows. I looked at their squad. I think 1-16, they're outstanding. They're really, really good. You know, no one's denying that. Yeah. They're a brilliant 1-16. But you go deeper than that. You scratch the surface on that. And I don't believe Pep trusts 17-24. Whereas Klopp is looking at 1-30 and goes, Conor Bradley, right, you're in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clark, you're coming off the bench. No bother. Didn't see it. It was seamless. And he trusts the kids. Jarrell Kwanzaa, we don't need to go and buy another centre-back. We don't need Nat Phillips back on. We've got Jarrell Kwanzaa there. We're grand. You know, I trust the squad. And that trust is transmitting to the rest of the squad. And they're going out playing with a confidence and a maturity that you very rarely see. And the fact that we're doing this... Sorry, I'll finish up now.
Please. You're taking exactly where I wanted to go with this episode.
Last season, we're left with Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott. We haven't seen Thiago yet. We haven't seen Stefan Bajcetic in any meaningful way. So we're really top of the league, playing a semi-final second leg against Fulham tomorrow night. Still in the FA Cup with a good draw at home to Norwich. And looking at Dublin for the Europa League final. And everything is on. Everything is on the table. I'm all on board with this. At the start of the season, I'd have been happy with top four. But the way this team has evolved, the maturity that it's showing, the ability to rotate and Klopp's willingness to trust players. I think we're on a journey and this journey is only going to go one way. The average age of this squad is under 26. You know what I mean? Premier League, you look at Premier League winners over the last two decades, your average age is normally 28, 29, you know, 27 and a half, whatever. Ours is under 26. So it's only going to get better. I think we're in a fantastic spot. We genuinely are.
Absolutely. Nigel, you wanted to come in here.
Yeah, apparently the other day, the oldest player we had, I think, on the bench was Cody Gakpo, 24. So, I mean, it's an incredible. Kev is spot on with this. Technically, average age-wise, we're in a really, really good spot.
Adrian was on the bench, but apart from him, you're absolutely right. We had Kwanzaa, McConnell, Beck, Gordon, Clark, Ravenberg and Gakpo. And the oldest apart from... and Kelleher, of course. So we take out the goalkeepers, and we had Cody Gakpo, who was 24, and the next oldest was 21.
We brought on five guys there, and the oldest is 24. There's a couple of 21-year-olds, a couple of younger than that. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible.
So many academy products, so many people. You're absolutely right, Nigel. And I want to ask you about the academy if we have time because of that 7-1. But I want to go to Alan next because Alan's been, I just really want to pick your brains about something, Alan, because Kev mentioned Manchester City being the most realistic challengers to our title push. A couple of stats for you, Anna. I want to get your opinion on them. Non-penalty expected goals plus expected assists. Okay, people don't like expected goals or expected assists, but for me, it does give you an idea of what you're creating, the chances you're creating, basically. And Liverpool are top of that league with 74. way ahead of Tottenham on 67 and then Manchester City 66.5. Okay, so 74, then 67 for Tottenham, and then Man City 66.5. But the actual goals and assists, which no one can argue with, Manchester City have jumped from 66.5 expected to 82 actual. There's a massive disparity between their expected and the reality. And skeptics among you who don't like the XAXG assist, well, there you go. That just proves that they're rubbish stats. But no, they're not. Because the rest of the league is more or less, there is not as big a disparity. And that's historical as well. If you look at XG tables on understat compared to the reality of what they score and what they concede, it's very, 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 very similar year after year after year. There are outliers, but I'm saying, Alan, that this is a big difference. And a lot of that is Haaland, because if you give Haaland a chance, he's going to score more often than not. But he's second on the list for big chances missed after Darwin Nunes. He's missed 17 big chances this season. It's a long way of saying that I think Manchester City have got some, when the stats they level up, they've got some leveling down to do. And also goalkeepers, people sleep on various goalkeeping statistics. Alisson versus Ederson this season, Alisson has 77.8% save percentage. Ederson's down to 64.7. And in terms of distribution, they're very similar in terms of short and medium passes with their completion, but Ederson's way ahead of Alisson in terms of long passes. But that's the only metric where Ederson is better than Alisson. I think Ederson's having a poor season, Alan. They both played about the same amount of minutes. So basically, I'm looking at the positives. I'm tired of those criminal City cheats breaking into our mind houses, rifling through our drawers in our bedrooms and putting those skid marks on our underpants, because collectively, that's what they've been doing the past few years, and it stinks and they stink. But I'm going to be positive, Alan. I think there's loads of reasons to be positive that we can hold off those stinky folk, keep them away from our houses this year.
Yeah, hopefully. And like you said, I'm only really getting into stats the last year since coming on the show, really, because I'm more of a visual person. You're the stats man, but even I've started to understand them better. Your comparison with Ali and Edison, like, there was, to me, goalkeeping is my thing. Like, I want to be a goalkeeper growing up. My son was a great goalkeeper. To me, Alisson is by far the best goalkeeper in the world, and he doesn't even get credit for what some people don't see. Like, the other night, Bournemouth were through twice on goal, one in particular, and Ali was out of his box, stood in front of the player. The player put it wide. Now, the commentators say, "Oh, bad shot, terrible shot, blah, blah, blah." It wasn't a terrible shot. He looked up, and there was Alisson in front of him. Alisson just stood there, didn't go down, didn't run, didn't give himself away. The player was under pressure, and he did a bad shot and put it wide. I don't know what way that comes up in stats, but to me, that's a world-class keeper, that he didn't get there to the ball, but he got in front of the player. If I remember correctly, Virgil was running along beside the player. That's a world-class keeper to me. Ederson, yeah, his stats were good over the years, but Ederson always has a brain fart in him. Like,
and there's a drop-off this season, man.
And this year, he's had a lot of them. But as for the stats, like I said, I'm not really the right man to talk about stats. But if you were to give me a 60% fit Alisson over Ederson, I'd take Alisson every day of the week. Absolutely. He's brilliant.
Would you say that Alisson's the best keeper that you've ever seen in the Premier League?
In the Premier League? Yeah, I hate to say it. I'd have to put Schmeichel up there as well.
He's the only competition, though. I'd say he's as good as Schmeichel, if not better.
I would say better all around, and a different era. Schmeichel was so good at coming out and doing starfish,
that was iconic.
Iconic, yeah. And to me, he was the best keeper at that. But no, I think Alisson would overtake him in all around goalkeeping. But like, very hard to compare, especially when he did win so much too, to be fair. Now, well, that's, see, that's painful, Owen. Stop asking me.
I'm sorry. But that's an argument that I find annoying, is the fact that, you know, when people look back on this Klopp era, the last 7 years, it's been, for me, the best football that Liverpool Football Club have ever played. And I include 88 and 70s team, because football has moved on so much. Like the average player in the 70s and the 80s with the drinking culture and the, you know, if you compare the athleticism now, you know, you could argue that, you know, a lot of players, you know, are a lot better. I mean, obviously it's difficult to compare eras because Liverpool were just rising above everybody else who was there, who were their competitors. But I do think football has become a lot more professional, and a lot, the players are so good now compared to in the past. Yeah. So when you talk about trophies, when Man United were winning the league with 76 points, they won it with 76 points once. And you compare, well, what have you won? You know, that's what they would say to any Liverpool fans. What have you won with this team? We've won a hell of a lot of matches. We've got more points than Fergie ever managed three times in the last 5 years. And it's an argument that annoys me about the actual trophies, because the quality of the football and the quality of the players, I think, is way above anything United ever had. But anyway, Nigel, let's move forward. I don't have too long, unfortunately. I'd love to talk about all this. If you're watching on YouTube, I want to go into a predicted lineup, because we've got Fulham coming up. Did you know, if you've been listening to the same amount of podcasts that I have, maybe you would have picked this one up, Nigel, but did you know that the last time Fulham were in a final was in around about 1975?
Beaten 2-0 by West Ham in the league in the FA Cup final.
Bah, very good. And of course, they might have a chance to play Chelsea. We're recording this before Chelsea play Middlesbrough. They're going to be as motivated a Fulham team as we've ever seen. So going forward, as I go on YouTube, I'm going to try and do a predicted lineup on YouTube for anybody watching. Let's try and pick a team, because I don't know about you, Nigel, but I want to go strong as heck. So would you go Kelleher in goal or Alisson in goal, and why?
He's picking Quivin for the League Cup, so I'd say Quivin will be in goal. I'm being...
Okay, we'll just go with Klopp. What would you do, though?
Yeah, I know. I'd go with Ali, but he won't.
Yeah, I'm the same. I would go with Alisson, because we've got this big chance to get to a final, and Kelleher hasn't been great. But, okay, we're going to go with Kelleher. Yeah, fair enough. Right back has got to be Conor Bradley again.
Yep.
Yeah, any feel free to disagree, by the way, Kev or Alan, but no one's disagreeing. So we've got Bradley in at right back. I mean, how enthusiastic are you, Nigel, about Conor Bradley?
Oh, he's excellent. He's unbelievable. Like he was on loan at Bolton. I got Player of the Year down there. I had two different Player of the Years, I think, with Bolton. And he's a really, really good player. But I wasn't expecting him to come in kind of this soon and look this good. The last two games, he's been absolutely sensational. So, you know, he's the man in possession. Let him play.
Absolutely, absolutely. And at left back, of course, we're going to have Gomez. But I heard that Robertson, good news, is back in training. Would anybody pick Robertson and chuck him in?
Too soon.
Gomez at right back?
No,
too soon. Robertson will travel. According to Pep Linder's press conference today, Robertson will travel with the squad. He'll be in the squad.
But on the bench.
I think he'll come off the bench.
Yeah.
Because he's been training all the time. The only thing he couldn't do in training was contact. He's been doing everything else.
So give him 10 minutes.
Yeah, give him a few minutes at the end of the game. Yeah, get his rhythm back. You know, we are the rhythm kings, absolutely. And then at the back, apparently is okay, but you're going to go with Kwanzaa to not risk him.
Yep.
Okay. I disagree. I'm going Ebu and Verge. I'm going to risk Ebu and sit out of Norwich on the weekend and play Kwanzaa against Norwich, because Ebu's just on fire. But I don't know. What would you take the risk on Ebu, Kev?
It's either or. I mean, the thing is, you fancy beating Norwich at home, irrespective of everything else, and there isn't another Premier League game until midweek the following week. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be one or the other. One will play tomorrow night, the other will play at the weekend. I don't think Virgil plays on Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised if tomorrow night you'd see Virgil and Ebu start, with the potential of Kwanzaa coming on 70 minutes or something. I think, or it could go the other way. Kwanzaa could start, play 70 minutes, and then Ibu comes on to close it out. Wouldn't be
absolutely
surprised.
But what would you do, though? If you know, Klopp is sick, Pep Linders has got the same thing. They're like, who's going to pick a team? They get on the phone.
I go on with Ibu and Virgil, especially with Kelleher starting. You want as much security in front of him as possible. Play Kwanzaa at the weekend.
That makes sense. Alan, there you go. So we've got two votes for Ibu. We've got one vote for Kwanzaa. Who are you going for, Alan?
Yeah, no, I'd play Ebu. Yeah, you win the next game. Worry about Saturday then.
Okay, excellent stuff.
And, Sunday, lads, 2:30.
Sunday, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a bit late. It's like half three, isn't it?
Half two.
Okay. Oh, good to know. Okay, so there you go. And Kev, on Ebu Konate, speaking about, is Alisson the best goalkeeper the Premier League has ever seen? Ibu Konate versus, for example, Saliba has been a conversation that is a very partisan conversation, because all Liverpool fans are going to say Ibu and all Arsenal fans are going to say Saliba. But I just look at France and their centre-backs, and it sort of reminds me of the 90s England, in that they've just got this spoilt for choice for brilliant young French centre-backs. What do you reckon about Ebu or any of that?
It's an absolute joke, isn't it? I mean, when you look at De Sassi, and I don't think he's been poor for Chelsea, he's about 8th, 9th on the list. He's Jules Koundé, you know. Jules Koundé has had to go to right back to get a game. You know, Jules Koundé is a standing player. Mm-hmm. Upamecano's got a mistake in him. I think the conversation between Saliba and Ibu is a case of who plays right, who plays left. France have an abundance of riches, and they're reaping the rewards of Clairefontaine, and that setup that was in large part due to Gerard Houllier and the work that he did there. France are reaping the benefit of a generation on. You know, it's embarrassing the riches that country has on tap. But saying that, I look at what England have produced over the last 4 or 5 years at youth level, and seeing we're reaping the rewards of Curtis Jones winning the Euros at the under-21s with the confidence that he's come back with. And that's played into this season, the same with Harvey. But for me, I don't think Ibu, if you look at Saliba, I think Saliba's an outstanding player. He's a different player. He's a different type of centre-back to Ibu. And I think the two of them together for France will complement each other brilliantly. I think they'll complement each other really, really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. It's a great answer. Moving into the midfield, we're gonna play McAllister in the number 6. I mean, I imagine there are no qualms with that. But then next to him, again, more good news is that Curtis Jones apparently is okay. So are you starting Curtis? Are you sort of risking that he's not gonna get any kind of
my midfield three would be McAllister, Gravenberch and Curtis Jones.
God, I wouldn't do Gravenberch.
The only reason I do Gravenberch is because I think Palinha and Harrison for them in the middle are really, really good. And away from home, you need the physicality, the size and the strength in the midfield. I think you look to managed, it's only 2-1, you know. I mean, it's only halftime, it's 2-1, and we're going there. They gave us a really good game every time we played them this season. And like you said, they're going to be eyeing up a possible final against Chelsea. They won't fear us at all, and they've got threats of their own. So I've got no problem going with Gravenberch in the middle. Plus, the other side of it is Klopp always likes to keep something in the back pocket to affect change in a game late, you know, for the last hour, for the last 30 minutes in games. So he likes to have that insurance policy in the back pocket.
And, if
that
and Harvey's your man.
Harvey's my man,
yeah, okay. Well, it's a decent argument. It's a decent argument. You haven't quite convinced me, though, because if you look at – I'm a stats man, sorry. And if you look at, for example, Gravenberch's pass completion and things like that, it's quite low. For example, it was only 66% the other day when he came off the bench, even though that was a much improved performance because he did very well. He won a couple of tackles. He was much better off the ball. But Alan, what about you? Where do you stand on this? I mean, we're having McAllister, Curtis Jones, Gravenberch, you've got Elliott, you've got Gakpo who could play there. Szoboszlai is still going to be out, so he's not available.
I see Kev's point there and I agree with it. Sometimes I prefer Harvey coming on for the last half hour, so that's why I take Kevin's point there. But I don't think so. I think he's going to play the same midfield again, and Gravenberch will be coming on for that last 30 minutes. Just Harvey didn't look. You know, some people were expecting Harvey to take over on the right side last week, and he didn't look great in the first half. But he was doing the work. You know, he was doing the work great. So I don't think Klopp's going to change that, especially if Bradley is behind him, because the two of them linked up last week quite well. Like, so that's why I would agree with Kev, but I don't see it this week.
Okay, so you're playing Elliott, Jones and McAllister?
Yes.
Okay. Nigel, where do you stand on this?
I'm in favour of the slightly more physical element. Either Gravenberch or Gakpo. I'd love to see one of those, either Curtis or the other, Alexis McAllister starts, either Gravenberch or Gakpo, whoever starts up there with Curtis, to try and push on to Paulinho and upset him. He's their main man. He's the one flopping on his face the whole time in the first half and trying to get our lads booked and sent off. I think we need to get stuck into him. Let him know we're there and don't let him settle on the ball. He's a very, very good player. But he got too much freedom in the first half, in the first game. And we've kind of put us on the back foot, but we kind of saw him off then. He's getting, you know, he's put a few miles on his clock early, basically. Make him, and I think the slightly more physical, more, more industrious player. I know Harvey is industrious, but economically industrious, so to speak, if you know what I mean. There's a slightly less effort with a lot more energy. And then bring on Harvey, like Kev said, nearer the end, and he run them into the spaces then after that. That's I'd go with a slightly more physical approach.
It's a very decent answer, but I don't know. I've got a quandary then, because we've got Nigel seems to be erring towards Gakpo over Gravenberch, and then Elliot third choice. Alan saying Elliot and Kev saying Gravenberch to partner Curtis and Alexis McAllister. But it's my podcast, so I'm getting the vote, and I'm saying Harvey Elliott, number one, because, Alan's celebrating that, because he's obviously a former Fulham player, and for some reason, professionals, they love to show their former employers how brilliant they've become or something when they play against them after they leave. So there's that element. And also, in the last match, even though Harvey Elliott was substituted, he made four tackles, which is a record for him. And that's something that I've wanted to see him improve pretty much every time I've seen him play, because it does get watery on his side when the opposition are running through. And I thought he's standing up, and he's not, because he's always had the will to run, and he's always busted a ball and a gut, and he had plenty of hernias running for the cause, and that's wonderful. But he's backing up with a bit more steel and a bit more. He won four tackles, and that was great. Kev, you wanted to come in on this?
Yeah. One point there, you have to respect what Fulham have got on that side as well. Robinson will get up and down that side of the pitch, and for me, I look at him in combination with Willian. For me, Willian is that one from our point of view that got away.
I really rate him. He would have been brilliant for us, wouldn't he?
He would have, yeah. Gerard did his level best to try. Okay. If you read Gerard's autobiography,
I can't remember that bit. Okay.
Well, apparently Gerard was in personal contact with him, trying to convince him to come to Liverpool before he went to Chelsea. Okay. And eventually he decided to go to Chelsea. But he's the one that got away. I love the longevity of his career, but he's a brilliant footballer. And I think if you're going to, and it's not a problem, if you're going to have Bradley and it'll actually tie into the forwards question. If you're going to have Bradley and Harvey on that side, then I think you have to have an industrious player playing on the right wing who's willing to track back and to get the hard yards in and to win the ball back, because away from home, they're going to have chances. So, you know, you're going to have to defend properly. And whoever we pick to play on that right side has to have that in mind as well.
It's a very good point. But you see, and I would agree, if we had a really industrious player, like I would, you know, ideally play Endo in the six and McAllister on that side and Jones on the other side. Because, yes, I totally agree. We do need the physicality. But the thing with Anthony Robinson, I love the player, by the way. I think he's brilliant. But he's got a weakness, and that is when he's pressed. And if you look at both of our goals against Fulham, they came from turnovers or pressure on Anthony Robinson. And I think that between Harvey Elliott and Gravenberch and Gakpo, from what they've shown this season, I think Elliott's the better presser. So I would. That's why I'm sticking with my choice. Although I get your point, it's a very good point. And I'm sticking with Harvey Elliott. Moving forward, though, you're absolutely right. We're going to need someone who's really, you know, really good at pressing on the right wing. Lucho Diaz is really good at that, and so is Diogo Jota. And Darwin's got a lot better as well. So I don't know, Alan. Who would you play up front?
You took the words out of my mouth with Lucho. I would like to see Lucho on the right side.
Lucho on the right side?
Yeah, he'll do that. Like, all our forwards will track back and work, but Lucho has the pace and the energy. So when you were talking there about, when Kev was talking about Robertson there, Lucho came to my mind straight away because...
His work rate is fabulous.
They'll all work hard, but Lucho will have the pace to be up and down the wing.
Are you not tempted after the second half performance of Diogo Jota on the right to put Jota there, keep Jota there, because he's also very good at pressing?
Yes, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Our three forwards will work hard and press, but I think Lucho might have more pace up and down. Okay. And then you could switch them over. It's another thing I'd like to see Klopp doing a bit more is switching players over. You know, even like I've said before, when Salah has been marked by three players on the right, they should throw him over to the left. You know, it's...
Yeah,
but I'd start with Lucho there for his energy and his pace up and down the wing.
Okay, I mean they were very fluid against Bournemouth. They were switching around a bit, but Jota was predominantly on the right in the second half, of course. But it was Nigel, you were nodding your head with Lucho.
Yeah, he's improved again. You know, he's been really good recently again, and it's looking.
Well, hang on. That for me is a bit of a, he's had a couple of good games and a couple of average games. It's sort of 50% of the last four games he's been really good, and 50% he's been ineffective. This is something I'm worried about. The last game, right, he had a 90% passing accuracy, which is what he's been posting. No dribbles. I'm worried about that, Nigel. I want you to calm my fears, because I'm worried that Lucho's losing a bit of confidence. I want to see him have at least three dribbles every game.
You see, problem is with these teams, they're going to start playing low block and sit deep. You're talking about Lucho's pace. Lucho's thing was get the ball and try and go past people and try and get round the back. These people are trying to stop us doing that. And we have to try and play through teams a little bit more. So he's going to invariably have to try and come across the field more than go down the wings. So I think he gets the ball. Like, do you remember the goal he scored against Crystal Palace and the goal he scored against Spurs when he cuts in? That's what he needs to do, I think. To get the best out of Lucho in that kind of position with dribbles, we need him to start cutting in and having curls rather than trying to get behind.
But that's exactly it. So you want him. So you need him on the left, and you need Jota on the right, so that he can cut in and he can cut in on his favourite right foot.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think?
That's where we need to use him.
Okay. What do you think, Kev? where you're playing Diaz?
I wouldn't start him.
Oh, interesting.
No, I think he's been bang average this season. Understandably, look, let's get it straight. He's had some serious personal issues. Guys, give me 1 minute. I'll be right back. Someone's at the door.
No problem at all. Yeah, no problem. I've got to get the Amazon package when it arrives. Absolutely. So, I mean, Lucho Diaz this season, I mean, his stats, he got 1,217 Premier League minutes, 1,200 minutes, more or less. 3 goals and 1 assist. In the Europa League, 270 minutes, 3 games, and 2 goals, which is good. But only 3 goals and 1 assist. The knee thing was the bigger thing than even his parents being kept hostage, in my opinion, because his parents kept hostage. It's going to affect you, obviously, mentally. I mean, like, who can imagine that? But it's like knee problems affect every footballer pretty drastically. Kev's not even starting Luis Diaz, which is interesting, but I just don't know who he would pick, so we'll wait for him to come back on that. But for now, I'm going to put him on the left and Jota on the right. Would you be happy with that, Nigel?
Yeah, I would. He hasn't been great, but he's improved enough recently to be holding his spotlight. I would like to see a little bit more from him, all right. But did you see the way we're using him as well? You see the passes that were played out to him? Mm-hmm. And then people are kind of coming inside off him. So, like, people maybe need not to be coming near him so much and let him try and run at the ball, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So people need to stop coming short for passes off him. So there's Kev now. We can let him commence his...
Sorry, lads. No, it was my postman, avid Everton fan. Mad Everton fan knocks the door, and the first, because look, I meet more Everton fans here than I ever will meet Man City. That's just because where the clubs are. Yeah. Uh-huh. But Lucho has been through the mill this season. I think Alan was making the point there about people coming too close to him. I think he's built up a really good relationship with Joe Gomez, because Joe Gomez is not going to overlap you. He'll just back you up and allow you the space, but. When you're playing against low blocks, it's the ball that needs to move, not you. So, but I think horses for courses, I wouldn't mind starting Jota, Darwin, Cody Gakpo in the middle, mainly to drop off and sit on Paulinho, not allow him the time on the ball, and to use him as the link, because you'll use Darwin and Jota coming from outside to win, almost playing like a 4-5-1 without the ball, where we'll have Jones and McAllister almost creating a two-man midfield. Because if you notice the way we've been playing lately, without the ball, we're dropping into a 4-1-4-1 or 4-5-1. With the ball, when we're in the final third, we just leave two on two or 2-on-1, we don't care. And we'll play 4-2-4 or 2-2-2-4-4.
Or 2-3-5. So, as I've seen, when Curtis Jones goes to the left wing and stuff, yeah.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And Joe Gomez tucks inside. It's mm-hmm. almost flipped what Trent does, but it happens mm-hmm. from the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. I just think that we've 4 forwards to get through the next month at the club. Mm-hmm. We have a game pretty much every 3 days, so I don't expect the same 3 to start all the time. And mm-hmm. with Norwich coming at the weekend, I wouldn't mind that being the change. But if he decides to go the other way and maybe rest Darwin, I think Gakpo will start. I'd be surprised if he doesn't. And maybe you want to manage manage Jota's fitness. Or you want to go the other way and say, okay, I'm going to leave Darwin Nunes come off the bench for the last 30. Either way, I just don't think he's going to do anything other than make changes to manage the squad for the fixtures that are coming up. Because Klopp will always look at, okay, this is a block of fixtures. This block of four fixtures we're going to manage, and these are the players we have to manage it with. And he'll chop and change depending on who's available, who's coming back, and whatnot. So, but yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing Luis Diaz this time being the one to miss out. Because
I like it. I like it. You've convinced me. You've convinced me, Kev. Has Kev convinced you, Alan? To we don't need Lucho.
Kev is the new teacher's pet. Huh?
No. There are no favourites. You are all my children.
Yeah. Very good, Kev. Yeah, your point's very good, yeah. I agree with you. He could change him, but I don't see it myself. But yeah, everything he said was spot on.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But you wouldn't do it. Okay. Yeah. Fair
no,
enough.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
No.
Okay. But no, I think you convinced me. I'm gonna take Lucha out of our lineup, which people on YouTube can see, and I'm gonna put Darwin on the left, and Cody Gakpo in the middle. A good stat on Jota. I mean, you know, I was saying before that 0.97 goals and assists per 90 is what Thierry Henry got in 2003-04, the Arsenal's invincible season, and it's what Darwin Nunez is on right now, 0.97 goals and assists per 90. Diogo Jota's on 1.07. So, you know, prime Thierry Henry, who took penalties for Arsenal, let's remember. Jota, no penalties, nothing like that. He's on 1.07, better than a goal or an assist every 90 minutes that he's on the pitch, which is absolutely insane. His finishing rate is like 0.8. It's crazy. His stats are absolutely crazy. But he's useless at keeping the ball. So if we're going to play Jota, you have to expect him to lose the ball more often than not. Or not more often than not, but he's only about 60% pass completion. So there you go. Nigel, you want to say something?
Yeah. I'd start Trent Kone-Doherty, Lewis Kumas, and Jaden Danz up front.
Oh, yeah, to finish us off as we got our lineup. Let me just go through the lineup, and I wanted to talk about that youth match because I know you watch all the youth matches as much as you can. So just to confirm our lineup, we've got Kelleher in goal. We've got Ibu and Virgil at the back with Gomez on the left and Bradley on the right. So we've got a midfield three of McAllister, Elliott, and Jones. We've got Cody Gakpo in a withdrawn role to man mark Pelina, stop him causing problems with the ball when Fulham have the ball. And we've got Diogo Jota and Darwin Nunez on the left. But, you know, enough of that hypothetical nonsense. In reality, Liverpool kids thrunced, which is a new word I've just made up. Arsenal 7-1. It was a thruncing, was it, Nigel? You watched it all. I watched about the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I tried to. I was in work, but I had it on. And yeah, they were really, really good. Trent Kone-Doherty, the young lad from Derry, who looks an amazing player. It's actually like watching Raheem Sterling in his early days at Liverpool. And he was flying at their right back. And the poor guy didn't know what to do. He was all over him like a rash. Jaden Danz, he's just gone up to the 23s from the 18s. He came back down for the game, scored a good opportunist goal, and then an absolute wonder goal for free kick.
Jaden Danz. If you haven't seen
Neil Danz used to play with Bolton. It's his son. Very, very good player. And then Jason Kumas' son, got a hat-trick. Wonderful. And he's very good at kind of sniffing out a chance and with a bit of pace as well. So there's some really, really good players in the under 18 and under 23 squads at the moment. We're in a good spot with our kids at the moment. So it's great to see.
Excellent. It is great to see. I want to thank everybody in the YouTube chat. Abdul Rahim, sorry, I haven't got time to go get into your comments. Abdul Rahim was here saying he would play Kelleher, Gomez, Konate, Kwanzaa, Bradley, McAllister, Elliot Jones, Gakpo, Jota, Diaz. Interesting lineup. That's very good. Abdulrahim says Diaz always goes on the right. He cuts in. He cuts in on his right. Jota can go left or right. He's good at dribbling, taking men on, a clinical finisher. He's very direct and at players. Indeed. Yes, indeed. Graham Rogers. Great to have you with us, Graham. He says Gakpo, Elliot, and Jota with Nunez as an impact sub. Ooh, interesting. Interesting front three. Okay, Nunez an impact sub if we need him. Yeah, because maybe Darwin needs a rest. All depends on fitness, doesn't it? Gary Richards is in the chat as well. Gary Richards, tally ho. He says Lucho needs to step up, but Starwin, Gary's famous nickname for Darwin, Starwin. Starwin in the nine, dear boy, says Gary Richards. Well, maybe you're right. And yeah, there you go. So thanks everybody in the chat. MCR Red is here. Hello, Mark. You know, hard to think Jota went almost a year, including being injured, without scoring. Yes, that would be a statistical anomaly, an outlier on the bell curve of Jota's career when we look back at it. But I want to thank you, everybody, for being with us. We've been going an hour and 15 minutes. It's been great, so great to talk about the Reds for this long. So thank you to the YouTube viewers. Thank you very much to the audio listeners, of course. You know, it's really great to be bringing your cop on again. I especially want to thank my guests. Kev, thank you very much for being on. Is there anything else you would like to add at the end of the show?
No, my absolute pleasure for coming on. Thanks for asking us to come on. I really appreciate it. Don't forget, everyone who's watching this, listening to this, the link to the charity that Talking Cop are supporting for the next 6 months are in the descriptions. So if you can't donate, obviously totally understand it. If you can copy the link and share it onto your social medias, because you never know who's going to read that and think, yeah, I'll drop a fiver, I'll drop a tenner, whatever. If you can't donate, then just please share. It takes 2 seconds. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Cheers. Absolutely. I've just put it in the chat for the YouTube viewers as well. This is the charity GoFundMe, and it'll be in the audio description of this. Force 22 Music says thanks all. Thanks to you, Force 22 Music, and thanks for your comments as well. Alan, do you have anything to add before we chip off and start dreaming of a Middlesbrough victory over Chelsea?
No, just thanks to the lads. Thanks to everyone in chat. And just to remind everyone to hit the like button, share, subscribe, help build the channel. Owen is on his way to building up the channel, and let's give him a hand. He well deserves it. Thanks, everybody.
That's very kind. Thanks, Alan. Yeah, the big target is 500 subscribers on more or less 280, which I'm absolutely delighted at so far. So, yeah, we're going to try and build that up. So thank you very much, Alan. Nigel, do you have anything to add? Have we missed anything?
Well, just good to be back on Cop On again. And just thanks to yourself, Owen, and thanks to Kevin Allen for a technically superior podcast.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. This was Trent Alexander-Arnold technique all throughout this show. Thank you very much to everybody. I'm glad we didn't get round to talking about the awful news that Paul Tierney has been chosen to referee the Chelsea match next Wednesday in the league. So we're going to have to play against 12 again, but we can come through it, guys. We can come through it. You know, we've faced sterner tests, and with this beautifully adaptable, beautiful, malleable Jurgen Klopp 2.0 Liverpool. Well, I think we're going to just smash everyone. So thank you so much, everybody. And we'll see you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.